The Oldie Lunch Recordings presents Tom Hodgkinson talking about the Idler magazine. Brought to you by Doro, number one in the senior mobile market.
Oh, boy. Gives Rudolph's red nose a whole new meaning, doesn't it? Our next speaker is the editor of Idler magazine, a treasure trove for anyone keen to delve into the world of contemplation. From Aristotle to John Lennon, every generation has its protagonists. What a saga, such lyrical lists of thinkers. I was talking yesterday to Eric Idle, an old friend. Watch you cry and start to bridle with impatience. But Idle is the key word here. I'll terminate in a trice. Let us sing idle virtue, not idle vice. Sit back, relax, as we hear from... He would try rhyming with Hodgkinson. Our last speaker, Tom Hodgkinson.
Barry's done a much better job than I'm about to do. Thank you very much, Barry. Thanks, James, for inviting me, and thanks all for coming. Yes, when I was about 23, I was working on the Sunday Mirror magazine and hating every moment, having really enjoyed myself at university, playing in bands and having a lot of free time and doing very little, being creative. And I thought, I really don't like working. I don't like the 9-to-5. And when I went home, I tried to wake up early and freelance when I had a day off. And found I was beating myself up for being lazy and full of self-recrimination. And then I read a series of essays by Dr. Johnson that were written in the 1750s, 1758 and 1759, called The Idler. And this is where the name came from for this idea for a magazine. Now, Dr. Johnson, as you might know, was the foremost man of letters of his day and very successful and a brilliant man. He was, his conversation was written down by Boswell and he was very witty in company. A strange man, very unhappy, prone to depressive moods and the black dog, and also deeply constitutionally lazy, though ambitious. And I read in his diaries that he would write right on the deadline for the printer. So people didn't quite know when he actually worked, because if you went to see him in the morning, he'd be asleep. He'd still be in bed at 2 o'clock. If you went to see him after lunch, he'd be engaged in chemistry experiments. And these were all sort of distractions from the work that he had to do. And then when the deadline came, let's say it was 5 o'clock, at 4:30, finally, he would manage to sit down, pull out the pen, and writes his essay, his column, for the Gentleman's Magazine, The Idler, or it might be The Rambler or something like that, at great speed. And the printer's boy would run from the printer, the compositor's office next door, and take each sheet of manuscript as it came from under his pen. He wrote that fast, he didn't even read back over it. And when he'd finished, he'd just collapse and go out to the pub, go to the taverns of London town with Bennett Langton and Topham Beauclerk and the other young rakes. And I thought, that's the life for me. So I decided to become a freelance journalist rather than engage with the 9-to-5 and start a magazine called The Idler. Because I thought, it's a beautiful idea. We live in a world which privileges hard work, and I'm going to describe why that happened in a moment. Political parties of the left and the right and the middle praise hard-working families. Under Gordon Brown, you would read headlines in the Daily Mail saying, you know, Brown wages work on the work, wages, excuse me, yes, wages war on the work shy. And David Cameron today will only sort of help people, he says, who are hard-working, member of a hard-working family, which conjures up this idea of a very hard-working sort of 85-year-old grandfather slaving away in the mines, very hard-working toddlers getting up at 7 in the morning and putting in a sort of good 10-hour day down in the mills. So I think it's time, I thought it was time, and it still is time, 23 years later, to praise contemplation, to praise the noble art of doing nothing, through a magazine and through books. My own personal life was I started the magazine in 93. We kept it going through the 90s. We were owned by The Guardian at one point, which is still well known for pissing money down the drain. They helped us out. And in the noughties, I moved out of London and lived on a farmhouse for 10 years, and wrote some books, which I'm selling here, How to Be Idle, How to Be Free, a book for parents called The Idle Parent, about how you should put much less work into your parenting, and a book about smallholding. So in this time, I've been able to study at leisure my favourite subject of laziness. What I'm going to do now for you is, in the next 5 minutes, is to give a sort of brief history of the world through its idlers, who I think are the best people. Now, we're going to start with in ancient Greece, where a man called Socrates basically invents the idea of philosophy, the love of wisdom. And he really does very little indeed. He doesn't even bother writing anything down. He just sits in the marketplace talking to people, asking them questions. He earns absolutely no money. His wife, Xanthippe, is known as a kind of shrewish nag, but that's partly because he doesn't bring any bread home, doesn't put any bread on the table. But he affects people. He's one of those people who just hangs around, does nothing, but he gets into people's minds. And as you know, Plato, who was mildly less idle than Socrates, though also a philosopher, decided to write down a lot of his conversation because it was so brilliant, a bit like Dr. Johnson. And hence we have Plato's Dialogues, Plato's Republic, Plato's Symposium, and all these kind of this kind of insight into the ideal for the ancient Greeks, which was to sit around doing nothing. And life wasn't about hard work. Of course, you had to work if you weren't an aristocrat like Plato. Aristotle also praised contemplation. He said that the contemplative life was the one most likely to lead to happiness. So if you wanted to find happiness, it was actually wrong to pursue riches like a merchant, to pursue honour and glory like a politician, because those things would fade, and the merchant was consumed with worry. If you could learn how to enjoy your leisure time by philosophising and reading and learn to love study, that's something that could stay with you for all your life through and would make you happy. And these ideas all came from Socrates, who was the ultimate idler. Aristotle was actually pretty busy. You know, he wrote a lot of books. He was a scientist as well. But he and Plato, as you know, they both started these the Academy and the Lyceum. And these were sort of precursors to that other great institution for sitting around doing nothing, the monastery. So the Academy started in something like 300 BC. I've probably got the dates completely wrong. The Academy was still running in about 600 AD when the Christians started the first monastery. So the ideal of a place to retreat from the world and contemplate, and the Greek's word for leisure is actually the same as our word for school. It was skole. And skole was something that our idea of school is it's kind of involuntary. It's a kind of training camp. For them, skole was what you did all through your life. It was the most important part of life. It was your leisure. Some of the other ancient Greeks who did absolutely bugger all were Diogenes, who lived in a barrel and refused to work. He wore ripped clothes, ate one chickpea a day. And when Alexander the Great came to see him, Alexander the Great said, "Is there anything I can do for you, Diogenes?" And Diogenes said, "Yes, can you get out of the way? You're standing in the light." He would also gatecrash parties, drink, and masturbate in public. I mean, he really was an outrageous kind of punk, basically. And a lot of these ideas were picked up on by the punks later, the idea of the ripped clothes, the refusal to work, the refusal to engage with society. And also he said, you know, I don't actually need anything. I can live in this barrel and steal my food and grow a beard, and nothing really matters. And there were the Stoics, Zeno of Citium, who started teaching in the Stoa, in the marketplace. And the Stoics promoted the idea, also a kind of interpretation of Socrates, that you should be very calm, in control of your emotions, and key into this thing called the Logos. Have I got 1 minute left? Right, okay, I've got 1 minute for the rest of humanity, yeah. Okay, let's speed this up a bit. Around the same time as these Greek idlers, ancient Greek idlers, you get the Chinese idlers, of course, Lao Tzu, who wrote the great book, The Tao Te Ching, and whose philosophy was called Wu Wai, do nothing, the idea of going with the flow. And Confucius kind of didn't really do anything. He told people to cultivate themselves. And of course, these guys were the precursor to the greatest idler of all, Christ. Now, he wrote, consider the lilies of the field. And not only did he not really actually have a job in his everyday life, but he promoted idleness and contemplation. Money making is a kind of a vanity. You know, hard work is a vanity. It's kind of egotistical. Consider the lilies of the field. They toil not, neither do they spin. Yet I say to you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed as one of these. Buddha didn't do much. Okay, I've got to speed this up a lot. Thomas Aquinas in medieval times brought back the Greek philosophers, Aristotle. The medieval period was all about, you know, retreat and contemplation. They loved the monks and the nuns. Now, something changed, which is what my real point here, the revision. Something quite seriously bad happened to this wonderful idling ethic that had dominated the entire world for centuries. And that was the Reformation. Two hyperactive young monks, Luther, Calvin, decided that this old way of doing things was absolutely wrong. It was corrupt. The priests were selling indulgences and so on. And work, not contemplation, was the point of life. The old ways were destroyed. The monasteries were smashed up in this country, as you know. The monks and nuns who had done nothing but quite successfully for about 1,000 years were turned out onto the road. And being homeless became a sort of a crime. The masterless men of Elizabethan England. Now, it was up to somebody like Dr. Johnson to kind of stand up a little bit for idling in the 1750s. But then later, we get the Industrial Revolution. So if the Reformation was the first blow to the contemplative ethic, the Industrial Revolution basically completely buried it. It was a revolution of industry against idleness, hence its name, the Industrial Revolution. There were, of course, a few opponents to it. William Blake, Lord Byron, supported the Luddites. Wordsworth and Coleridge sprang up as kind of latter-day Taoists, praising nature and talking about the contemplative life. But really, things were kind of over. Later in the 19th century, Oscar Wilde came back. You know, he stood up for inactivity. The contemplation is the noblest art, he said. You know, otium and bellum, leisure and war. This was the prejudice of the ancient people. Not work, not hard work, not middle-class striving, but either be a warrior or sit around doing nothing. Otium and bellum were the highest calling of man. But it didn't make much difference. And then even Keynes and the other serious men of the 30s, like Bertrand Russell, praised idleness and predicted a 3 or 4 hour working day or a four day week. Bertrand Russell wrote an essay called In Praise of Idleness, which was a kind of an anti-work essay. Later on, it was down to somebody like John Lennon to stand up for idling. He wrote a song called Watching the Wheels Go Round and Round. People say I'm crazy. People say I'm lazy. I think they're crazy. What's the point in striving? Tomorrow never knows. Turn off, relax, and float downstream. I'm so tired, and the great one, I'm only sleeping, which is a kind of riposte against people who think that there's something wrong with being asleep. In the 60s, the situationists, the sort of pre-hippie philosophers like Guy Debord wrote on the walls of Paris in graffiti, ne travaillez jamais, never ever work. That's your protest against society. They also ripped their clothes like the cynical philosophers, and gave birth to the punk movement. The Sex Pistols' first album is full of this sort of thing. You know, I won't open a letter bomb for you. I don't want a 9-to-5 job. I don't want to be kind of dragged into the system. And who's left today? Well, we're doing our best with The Idler, which is now it started as a bi-monthly magazine and then became a biannual magazine before going down to an annual for a few years because we found the stress too much of pumping out all these issues. But now I'm back in London, and James is kindly helping us with the oldie. We're publishing now 4 issues a year in a sort of quarterly granter type thing. So we're very, very busy little bees. You can see it next door, our productions. And I hope you oldies will join us to sit down for your right to be idle. Thank you.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015.